Welcome to Albuquerque UFO UAP Explorations. My name is Birdie, and our guest today is Linda Polio, a visionary consciousness doula and the author of Trusting the Currents, a winner of the Nautilus Gold Award for fiction. Linda's journey from a successful advertising career to a spiritual awakening underscores her deep commitment to elevating human consciousness. As a thought leader in conscious business and communication practices, and the world's first chief consciousness officer at a global futurist marketing consultancy, Linda brings a wealth of experience in guiding individuals toward expanded self-awareness and personal transformation. Linda will share insights into her spiritual journey, her role as a consciousness doula, and her upcoming project, Wisdom Keeping, a consciousness portal and awakening online course designed to support those embarking on their own journey of self-discovery. Discover how to tap into energetic frequencies and connect with your innate wisdom as Linda delves into the heart of consciousness and its profound impact on personal and global evolution. Together with Linda, we will explore how becoming more aware of your own consciousness can facilitate understanding and communication with non-human intelligence. Whether you're new to the concept of consciousness or a seasoned seeker, Linda will inspire, enlighten, and ignite your path to greater awareness. Welcome, Linda. Thank you so much for having a conversation with us.
Thank you. That was some intro. I'm very flattered and honored. It's beautiful, too.
Thank you. Well, you deserve it. It's important for everyone to know all the amazing things that you have done. You have quite the life story. Why don't you tell us how you got into the study of consciousness and how you've moved along in your path?
Oh, wow. Well, it is a lifelong journey. I think I was born this way. Like I think most of your audience probably would feel the same way. I was having all kinds of unusual contacts when I was a child and being told that it was my imagination. I was communicating to insects. I was not the normal kid, and I was very sort of prognosticating. I was able to see things that weren't actually happening yet, which used to freak people out. So I learned to kind of keep it quiet. And over time, I just sort of repressed everything and became what would be considered normal. And particularly through my 20s, I just, you know, went to school and then I went into advertising and I did my best to conform. And it wasn't until I took care of my father for a year before he died, when I was in my late 30s, early 40s. And 3 days after he died, I heard a voice say, go to Sedona. And I had heard of Sedona before, but I had never been here. And I just got on a plane. I had nowhere to stay, didn't know why I was coming, didn't know how long I was going for. And I ended up staying for 5 months. And in those 5 months, all of my childhood spirituality really got reawakened. I had a whole bunch of mystical experiences. I reconnected with insects. I was having all kinds of relationships with nature in general and with sort of shamanic cosmic beings. And after the 5 months, I went back to New York and I knew I could never go back to being the person I had been. I didn't want to be in advertising anymore because I needed to bring what I had learned and I had experienced in Sedona to the masses. I actually heard a voice say, communicate to the masses in a positive way. So that's when I began my journey into conscious business practices. And it was really at the beginning of organics and solar energy and all these amazing human beings who really wanted to change the planet for the better were coming up with all these different kinds of entrepreneurial companies that were meant to help transform the world in a positive way. So I ended up getting involved with communications, marketing, branding, just part of that community of people. That was when LOHAS was beginning, and I became very much involved with LOHAS. And long story short, I ended up becoming the world's first chief consciousness officer for a global marketing consultancy. And I was working with the CEOs and CMOs of Fortune 100 companies, bringing what I consider the human technologies of wisdom, intuition, compassion, empathy, yes, forgiveness, and gratitude into business. And that wasn't really quite understood back then. I mean, right now, right, I think we're at the most highest consciousness we've probably been in, at least in our modern times. So more people understand what consciousness is. But back then, I had to explain what the word even meant. Right. And it's just been a journey from then. Once I opened that up and I accepted that, I went down a rabbit hole and I started studying all different kinds of spiritual practices and energetic practices. I'm extremely frequency, yes, adept and frequency knowledgeable. And now I'm a consciousness doula. And my whole goal in life is to be of service to those who are beginning to awaken into a new consciousness and help them birth everything that is going to be coming through them during that period of time and give them a sense of community and bring them resources, yeah, and connect to each other. And there's, like you, there are a lot of people out there right now that are part of this new world that we're trying to build.
Right.
And it's kind of a balance with all the technologies and the AI that's also coming up.
Yes.
Which I don't think it looks bad only because there's no balance in human consciousness. But once we understand that if we balance it with human consciousness, we can use AI in a way that right now doesn't look like it's going to be used for, which is our benefit.
Yeah, I will have to agree with that. I had never heard the term consciousness doula before. I mean, you might be the first one to use that label, I think.
I've always had, my whole life, I've always been on the edge of whatever was coming.
Yes.
Usually too far ahead for anyone to understand anything I was talking about.
Right.
But I would create titles, just like when I created the title of Chief Consciousness Officer.
Yes.
My whole idea is you have to have the words. Language is very important. And I,
yes,
always connected consciousness in business with digital technologies, because when digital technologies first came onto the planet, it was basically a bunch of weird people out of working in garages and attics.
Absolutely.
And new energy that was coming in that no one really knew about and no one believed in, and they started creating their own language. I mean, there was a language that came out of technology. And then once this really began to shift into mainstream corporate world and mainstream,
right,
universe, corporations had to create a position called the Chief Technology Officer. And it was,
right,
someone who understood those technologies, which are basically masculine technologies. They're external technologies. And human technologies are feminine technologies. And just like we need a Chief Technology Officer, I believe, and I still believe, we need a Chief Consciousness Officer to instill those and balance out a lot of the technologies that are happening. So we have a more aligned future that is, you know, using technologies for the betterment of humankind.
Yeah, that is a great point, because you can see kind of in this push towards transhumanism, where people are wanting to mix technology with their own biology. We have Elon Musk experimenting with that Neuralink people are implanting into their own brains. And I think that some of this technology is frankly quite terrifying and, mm-hmm, isn't life affirming, consciousness affirming. It's giving you a boost in areas that perhaps tamps down your own innate awareness in favor of being, you know, hooked into the grid. So,
well,
I love the idea of having someone inside these companies who is able to talk with developers and, mm-hmm, CEOs, administrators, HR, anybody in a company who has their finger on the pulse, and to talk about how they can bring, you know, equality and consciousness into the equation. I love that.
Well, I think a Chief Consciousness Officer is also the advocate for the heart. There's a,
yes,
lot of consciousness out there, as you well know. I mean, there is,
yes,
earth consciousness, there is cosmic consciousness.
Right.
Consciousness is very neutral. It is neither bad nor good. It's how human beings work it. But if you go through the heart, as everyone knows, through heart math, we have a huge,
yes,
field around our heart. It's way more powerful than our mind is, but we don't use it because our traumas are very much tapped into there. So we have to first tap into our traumas. But once we we're able to do that, we can open our heart, and the heart can give us directions and vision that the mind, you know, the mind is really a tactical machine,
right,
to help the heart get to where it needs to go. And a consciousness officer is all about bringing the heart into a corporation so that they can communicate different kinds of programs to their employees and to their partners and to their consumers in a way that really hits them in a very intimate, positive, connecting way.
Right.
But corporations have got to change the way that they operate.
Yes.
You know, there have been attempts by like conscious capitalism to bring all the shareholders into the equation, not just all the stakeholders into the equation, not just the shareholders. But that's, you know, again, that's part of my mostly past in when I was doing work in the corporate world. I kind of have gone down deeper into the rabbit hole to really understand human consciousness and cosmic consciousness and earth consciousness in ways that most people probably don't want to go all the way down there.
So what do you do as a consciousness doula if someone comes to you and they tell you that they're interested in learning more and expanding their own awareness? What kinds of things would you have them do?
Well, I mean, I think the first find out where they are. I mean, because everyone, you know, there is no one size fits all. We're all coming from our life from a different perspective. We all have traumas from our life. Very few people have gone through their life in some beautiful way. And if you have, you are so lucky. But most of us are dealing with some kind of childhood issues. And a lot of it wasn't even things that our parents tried to do bad for us, but we were traumatized at times when we had no language. So we couldn't understand and we couldn't communicate that we were struggling. So these things get locked into us. And if we don't tap back into them, we keep repressing them down and they end up coming up as toxins that we spit at other people. Which I think is what's happening a lot now is we're not in touch with our own trauma. So what we do is we bring it up and it has to come out of it. It's like a poison. So we spit it at other people because we're told by external sources that these are the bad people. We are the good people, we are the bad people. So it's, you know, I try to get people to take the time to sit in their own awareness and allow what comes up to come up. And there are all kinds of resources. I mean, you know, we live in a very kind of open and full world of different kinds of resources and books and courses and teachers and that are available to help people. And we all have resonance because, you know, someone may not resonate with me, and that's for a bunch of different reasons. It could be my tone of voice. It could be my ancestral energies. It could be a bunch of things that we don't have to really delve deep into. But if someone's not resonating with me, you know, don't shoot the messenger. I mean, don't shoot the message. You may not like the messenger, but the message may be good. You just have to find the person that you're resonating with. And maybe it's the way that they communicate. You know, I communicate in probably a deeper consciousness way that is a little woo-woo for people, but you can take the same exact information that comes from me and someone else can communicate it in a way that is way more digestible to the masses. And I'm all for that. I don't believe that there is, I mean, we live, all of us that are doing this work, there is no competition. I coined a phrase called collaborative interdependence. And I think we're really all about, we're all separate beings, but we're all sharing the same vision and we have to find ways of coming together. And there is no competition because we all want this to happen. We all want the world to become something unexpected in a positive way. So I just find whatever ways I could do that. As you had mentioned in the beginning, I'm starting a new website called wisdomkeeping.com, which is still in its infancy because I am a tech moron. and I am working on it slowly, but it's really meant to be a portal and not just for people to find me, but I want to work with all people that are heart-based, that are higher integrity, that are collaborative to the point of generosity, and that are here to be of service to those that are beginning to wake up and are lost. Because usually when you begin to wake up, you're alone. The people around you don't understand you. You're having experiences and feelings that are alien to you, and you're afraid of them. So you need someone to help you normalize the experience you're having and give you a little process that you'll be going through. So when you hit the dark night of the soul, or when you get stuck in your patterns, or when you find that you need to start taking care of your body better because your energetic frequencies are saying, I can't survive. Right. This body can't survive if you don't shift the way that you're taking care of it. And then you elevate your own frequencies and you're able to take care of yourself better physically. So these are all things that you that hit along the way of a conscious awakening. So that's, I think, is my primary goal right now, is to help people that are waking up, because we lose a lot of people that are having these experiences and don't know what to do with them and end up either taking their lives or going back down deeper into the abyss. And they could be incredibly happy and incredible positive influences on others around them. So I think that's, what I'm really about, birthing consciousness within individuals.
Love that whole visual, that it's a birthing process. And as a mom of five, all grown children now.
Oh my God.
I know.
You're very brave.
I'm not sure brave is the word, maybe silly, but yeah, they're all wonderful people all out in the world and amazing, amazing human beings. But just having gone through the birth process with the doula, our midwife, I love the idea that, you know, you're bringing people through that painful birth canal, like what you're describing, that this can be scary when you first start opening your mind and realizing that the world isn't simply what you've been told it is your whole life, that there is so much more surrounding you, and all the ways you're connected to every other person, every other member of our human family. We're all connected in some way. And you know, as a UFO person, I believe we're connected as well to our cosmic family out there.
Yes,
and,
we are.
And so I really am resonating with what you're saying. And I would like to bring up your book, because I think your book is a great illustration of all of these kinds of fundamental practices that you're talking about. Everyone, you have to go get Linda's book. It is fantastic. I got it on Amazon as a Kindle, and there you can get it as a print copy or as an ebook. And it is called Trusting the Currents. And it is a fiction book, but it feels real. It feels like this is a real story. It doesn't feel like it's a make-believe or pretend story. It's feels real about a young African-American girl who goes, she has this amazing journey. So how did you come up with your character and with all of the things that she went through and her learning process throughout all of her, the various obstacles that she had?
Well, I don't think I came up with her. I think she came up with me. I was not going to write a book. And when she first came to me, I was sitting in New York City and I was consulting. At the time I was doing conscious business consulting and I was working on a project, and all of a sudden, and I've gotten my whole life what channeled in me what I would call high knowledge. Like I just would get transmissions of information that was for people or for me that I needed to bring to others. But it was very, very powerful. And I've worked with light language and light language art and all different kinds of technologies that basically help you bring this information in. Yes. And I was just sitting there, but I was working, and it was the first time I had heard an actual voice, and it was an old Southern Black woman. And her first words to me were, "It's not what happened to me that matters." And it really shook me, because it was an unusual experience for me. And I just wrote down the sentence on my computer, and then she kept talking, and it was sort of stream of consciousness. And she talked for two or three paragraphs, and then I felt her leave, and it stopped, and I went back to work, and I went, okay, that was weird. And then 3 or 4 days later, I felt her presence again. I opened my computer and she picked up where she left off. So every time she came to me, she would pick up where she left off. So I never knew, I didn't know I was writing a book for a year. I just had a very strong impulse that I had to write this story. She asked me to write her story. I accepted it. I didn't know what I was getting into. But it took me 2 years to channel the first draft. And after 9 months, she took me back to Sedona to finish the draft. But She got named Addie Mae. She wouldn't give me her last name for a year. And it was the anniversary of the Birmingham church bombings that killed the four little girls. And they had the photographs of the four little girls that were killed. And as soon as I saw Addie Mae Collins, my heart just leaped out, and I knew that that was Addie Mae's name. Now, I don't think this character is Addie Mae Collins, but there was something, there was a resonance between Addie Mae Collins and this being that was speaking to me. So for the rest of the time I wrote the book, I had a picture of Addie Mae Collins taped to my computer. So she became really the influence. And, you know, I'm a white woman from New York. I was a middle-aged white woman from New York writing about a Black Southern girl. I knew that that was not going to go over well on many levels. And I would always ask her, you know, why me? You know, this was, I didn't look to write a book. I was not really the right person for her. And she would basically tell me two things. One, she would say, to show what two women who share the same compassionate spirit can accomplish when they do something together. And the other one was to show how the beauty of our differences matter, that wherever we come from, we don't have these differences, and that we come here because we want to be different. We want to be different colors. We want to be different sexes and thoughts and minds. And that is the gift that we're giving upon birth. And we celebrate that as whatever energies we are. And then when we go back, we blend back into whatever that is. So she wanted me to know that that was the reason that she chose me. So it took me 2 years to channel her, and I finished it here in Sedona. And then I went back to New York because I was completely whacked from channeling this book. And I wasn't really be able to function in the real world at that point in time. So I put the book away for a year. And I went back to my business. And then about a year into it, I heard her begin again saying, it's time to start editing the book, because it all came out in heavy Southern Black dialect, the first draft. So I wrote it the way I heard it, but I couldn't publish it that way. So I had to go in, and then it took me 8 years to edit it.
And it's beautifully written. I have to say, it's an absolutely gorgeous read, and it speaks right to the heart. In fact, we just one of our viewers right now just posted a little comment here. I'm going to highlight on the screen. I got chill bumps as you talked about channeling Addie Mae, and then she Googled Addie Mae Collins' picture and is looking at her picture now. How cool is that? So
she was a big influence in this, and I don't really know. You know, we can. You know, I don't think we know. I personally don't know anything. All I have is, I call them realityness. We build realityness based on our belief systems. And our belief systems are created by our cultural conditions, where we're born, who we're born to, our religion. Yeah. And these things influence whether we want to admit it or not. And then it's our experience. What kind of experiences do we have? What kind of people do we surround ourselves with? So we basically become these, we create this reality nest so that our soul and our spirit has somewhere to land in this world. Otherwise, we're floating around in space, and we can't really function and manifest in a physical way. So, when I was writing her, I did spend, one of the reasons I spent 8 years was I embedded an energetic frequency into the writing, which brings the reader into your heart.
And okay,
that was all because she really wanted people to feel that the heart is where everyone is connected. And if we could find a ways to get back to her heart and release the trauma that's in it, we could find our way through. It was quite an amazing experience. And I was taking care of my mother 24/7 during the end of that, because my mother really was very ill and needed 24/7 care for 9 years. So I was kind of up at bat for that period of time. So when the book came out, I was enmeshed in caregiving and really had no way to support the book. But I entered that first award, which was the Nautilus Award. And to my surprise, it won the gold medal in fiction. And then it went on to win another 12 awards over the next year. But I've never really done an enormous amount of marketing to it, because I didn't have the time, and then life took away. But she finds, she tends to find her people. And I think the one thing that she does, and I get a lot, I have incredible reviews on Amazon. And what I get is people feeling like they are Addie Mae, and whether they're, you know, a middle-aged white guy from New York,
right,
or, you know, somebody from South Africa, or they all have a connection to her because she really shares her humanity. And this is the book about being human.
Yeah, I agree with that. I definitely felt a kinship with Addie Mae while reading the book, and can find, you know, little bits of myself in different scenes and conversations. So yeah, thank you. Thank you for your book.
Thank you for reading it.
It was my pleasure, truly.
She's always happy when someone finds her, right? I have, like I said, I don't really do much promotion, but she does what she does. And I'm very grateful for her. She's been the biggest influence I've ever had in my life. And it's funny, when I first came back from channeling it, because all the characters are African-American, and it's really beautiful, strong women, Black women characters. And, you know, I came back to New York after channeling it, and I used to like put my nose up to windows when I'd see groups of Black women having coffee together. And I would feel this to be part of that, but, you know, I wasn't. But it was a connection to that I had to her and her family during that time that I lost when the book was, when the channeling was finished. She never quite came back in the same way once I finished the channeling.
Right. Yeah. Your work was done.
Her work was done.
Yeah.
My work went on for a lot more years, but her work was done.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the practice of engaging in different kinds of consciousness raising or awareness. I know that a lot of people do meditation. Here in our UFO group, we have a group of people that do the CE5 meditation. They go outside and they do a special group meditation where they connect with each other and then extend their consciousness out into the universe and hope for a message in return. And I'm wondering, what kinds of meditation practices do you engage in, or can you recommend for somebody who might be interested in expanding their awareness in general?
Well, honestly, I am not a good meditator because my mind just goes too fast, but I find other ways. For me, my meditation is nature. I am very connected to the earth here. And even when I lived in New York City, which I did for all of my adult life until I moved here 4 years ago, I always kept a bag of dirt, like organic dirt, under the sink in my kitchen. And whenever I would get stressed out or I'd feel, you know, a little out of sorts, I would take the bag out and I would put my hands in the dirt and I would smell it. And it was like
so grounding.
It was grounding, and the smell was just beautiful. And that to me was a meditation.
Yeah. So we're talking about consciousness, and what kinds of practices would you recommend for somebody who maybe is new to the whole idea and maybe isn't even sure what consciousness is? It's one of those words that doesn't have a strong scientific definition. It's a word you get or you don't get, but science hasn't been able to quantify consciousness. So
I think if they put more money into the study of it, we probably would figure it out. But all the money is going into AI. It's not really going into human consciousness. So that's one of our biggest problems. But, you know, consciousness for me, it's a very complex thing. I look at consciousness two ways. One, it's like a big donkey, and it's everywhere. And it's very, it's a little bit of everything. So you have, you know, you're the consciousness of the mind. You have the consciousness of different body parts, which could be the earth or whatever. But for me, again, to work with human beings, you want to tap into the consciousness of the heart, because that is what's going to influence and affect people in the best way. And I always talk also about consciousness being Russian dolls, because you're in a certain level of awareness that you believe is absolutely true.
Right.
And that's why the truth is a prism. You really don't know the truth. The truth is only it's a moving object. So you believe a truth.
It is.
And you hold on to it very tight. But then either through pain, through a spontaneous awakening, something will happen, and all of a sudden you will blow out. And that's what the awakening process is. You blow out of that belief system you had of consciousness within that Russian doll. And all of a sudden you're in a brand new phase, and you're in a brand new phase of the Russian doll, and you see things for the first time.
Yes.
And it's those aha moments in life that you go, oh, I didn't see that before. And then you get to populate that space with more knowing and knowledge and resources and people. And then there's another one. I mean, I don't think we ever get there. I mean, I love the idea of enlightenment, but I don't think as human beings, at least most of us, are ever going to get there. Just how many dolls do we open up before we die?
Right. And we have so many things we have to balance too, as part of that equation. So you can, you know, have your moments. I know, like for myself, I'll have these amazing moments of enlightenment where I feel at one with everything around me. I can understand everyone's motivations and emotions, and I feel just so at peace. And then,
I can't keep it.
30 seconds later, the dog starts barking, and I'm just like, oh man, can't he just shut up?
Yeah, and then you question whether it was real. And I think that's the big problem.
Exactly. Yes.
When you're having a mystical experience, you are absolutely sure it's happening. There is no doubt. It is a moment that time stands still, and you know something mystical is happening.
Yes.
But what happens is, once it's over, the further you get away from it, the more you move out of that consciousness that you were in, and the less you believe it was true. And then once you get other people around you telling you that you were imagining it, you start listening to those voices instead of your own voice. And I think one of the biggest, I think the biggest journey is that journey into yourself. I call it your inner resonance signature. And it is the one resonance that is within you, that is you alone. Because when you're born with this one resonance that is just you. No one else on the planet has it. And through social conditionings and our religions and life and, you know, trauma and everything, it kind of covers up. So as we go through the awakening process, it's like peeling an onion. You have to peel off all those social conditionings to find that inner resonance signature again. And you can't stay there. But what happens is, once you can feel it and once you know it's there, you can find techniques and ways and community to support your ability to get back there. So you can start living from that place. You can start manifesting from that place. And it's not from manifesting from a place of, oh, I want a car, you know, or I want this. It's manifesting from a very, very deep soul place that you discover who you are and what you're here to do on the planet. And, you know, the sort of magic that's part of being alive. You know, it is this magical, very minimal time here. And we forget, and we put too much negativity into ourselves and into other people, when it could be a lot more fun, you know, and a lot more loving.
Yes. Yeah. You know, just going back a little bit, you're talking about how when you have these moments of realization, how easy it is. In the moment, you know it's real, it feels real, you know it, the very inner core, that this is a real experience. And then it's after the fact that you have these second guesses and these doubts. And I think that a lot of people who have UFO experiences, just to bring it back to the group a little bit, it's very, very similar. People will see something, or they will have some kind of strange encounter that they can't explain, or a consciousness connection, and they receive a message. And in that moment, they know that that is real. That is a spaceship up there, or that is an actual being that's communicating with me. And then later, the doubt creeps in, and people start telling you that you're wrong. It's all it's all part of that consciousness equation. And you were telling me before the show about an experience that you had with missing time in New Mexico here.
Yeah, I was at a shaman's retreat. This is probably 15 years ago now, outside of reserve, which is in the middle of 3.4 million acres of wilderness. And we had a very intense time. It rained the whole time. It was a life and death thing. We almost drowned in a flash flood. And so by the time we got out, it was too late to drive anywhere else. So we just saw me and the woman that was in the hut with me. It was a very raw experience.
Yes.
We decided to stay in this little hotel. But the little hotel, this is before really cell phones. And they didn't have a phone. They were shut down because it was a little tiny hotel, but we did get a room. So we had to drive 15 minutes to reserve to find a phone. So we could call people and let them know that we were alive, because we were
right
in the bush for 5 days straight with no contact with anyone. So we start driving. And as soon as we start driving, we drove into this celestial light. And I've never seen it before, and I've never seen it since. And there was a like a face in it. And luckily, there were two of us there. So we knew something was happening. It wasn't just our imagination, because we were both having the experience. And all I could see as I was driving, it was almost hypnotic. I saw it was all light. Like, it was dark out, but it was the ground, the road was light, the sky was light, everything was light. But I could just vaguely see the lines on the highway. But so I felt like I had driven, and we were in this kind of altered state. And I thought I had driven about 15 minutes, and then we came out of it. And when we came out of it, we didn't know where we were. And we drove to this little hotel right there. And it turned out we were 45 minutes away in Arizona,
wow,
in Alpine, Arizona. And we had no idea how we got there. But we did have this energetic experience during the process, but we don't remember anything. And so we had to drive all the way back. Like, it was almost an hour to get back to where we had left to find this hotel.
Wow.
That was a very, that was the only time I've had that kind of experience. I've had other experiences as a child. I had visitations in my room a lot, and I was always very cosmic oriented. I was always, connected into cosmic beings, and I've had experiences throughout my life with things. But again, once you get through them, you sort of begin to integrate them into your life. And having a healthy skepticism is important.
Yes.
Because you can't believe everything, and you don't know what tricks your mind plays, and you have to do function in this world. And if you go too far off the grid, you can't function in this world. So I find, having a balance between your experience and being able to live in this world, being 3D and 5D, we need to be 3D. We can't live completely in the 5D. And I've had 5D experiences, which I couldn't maintain because I couldn't function. So, we're all just playing with this right now. And we're really learning. We're sort of, those of us doing this work are on the leading edge of all this. And we're here to help others as they begin to wake up and provide them with the pathways, so that maybe it's not as difficult as we had it, because my journey was not easy. I went into deep dark nights of the soul, and I had a lot of questioning and made a lot of mistakes. And I don't think we have the time for the ones behind us to do the same things that we did.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that almost everybody has had those dark nights of the soul who is into all of these different related fields. It's just part of that process that losing bits of yourself, that cultural conditioning you had growing up, religious conditioning, things you were told,
your relationships, your sense of identity, your money, your home. It can be scorched earth, and that's a big part. And you get a sense of isolation, and part of that isolation is necessary, because you need to pull away from social media and the outside world. You need to pull deeper into yourself, because you need to expand the inner universe. We are taught to go into our external universe. We're taught about the stars. We're taught about the universe. But we have as large an inner universe as we do an external universe, but we are not taught how to go in there and what to do when we're in there. So that's part of the work that I'm trying to do, and that a lot of other people right now are trying to do, is help people navigate that inner universe so they can discover who they really are, and they can start bringing the aspects of who they are on the inside to the outside. So they're not buffeted around by the outside as much as we've been buffeted around in the last few years.
Yeah. So what kind of advice would you give to someone who's going through one of those dark nights of the soul, a big struggle right now, because they are maybe new to this? And there's a lot of people coming into these areas right now.
Yeah, a lot.
A lot. There's big changes out in the world. And some of these people are having a really hard time. What advice can you give them?
Well, I would say, first of all, disconnect from social media. I know it's really hard, but it is an addiction, and it's not, it's taking you away from yourself. So
yes,
as best you can, practice it in stages. Like, get up in the morning and spend the first 15 minutes, whether it's meditation, sitting under a tree, drawing. Art is great. I mean, yes, you can draw, dance, sing, do something creative. Just do something that only involves you and does not require you to be looking at anything or making decisions based on other people's decisions. Because what consciousness right. tries to do is bring you back into your own consciousness, where you have all the answers for yourself.
Right.
And you have to go through the idea that you don't trust yourself, because you've been taught not to trust yourself. But you are the most trustworthy person you know. And so I would just disconnect from social media, connect to nature, journal, write down your dreams, and particularly, I think, find others in your world. Like, I know a lot of people out there are feeling like they're the only ones that feel
right,
this way.
Right.
I guarantee you there are other people in your atmosphere that are having the same experiences, but they're not talking about it either.
Right.
So, when I first started waking up, like many, 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 many years ago, I would just throw out words like energy, consciousness in a group, just to see who would be. It was like fishing.
Oh, interesting.
I would feel that there was someone else that was like me, whatever I was, but I didn't know who they were. I wasn't advanced enough to be able to pick up on the frequencies of people at that point that I wanted to be with. So I would throw out words, and language is very powerful. And then all of a sudden I'd see a head pop up from the group and I'd go, and we would look at each other and I go, okay. So then the two of us would break away and we would go and talk, and we'd have this 5-hour conversation because we were able to finally communicate everything that we were feeling inside with someone else who was feeling the same way inside. So I think it's really important that you find your, if you don't have a community, because right now it's really hard to find a community, and that's what some of us are beginning to build,
right,
so that you don't feel alone. But
exactly.
Just find that one person that you can talk to, because there is someone in your world that is at least open and interested in this. And this isn't perfect. We don't, like I said, we don't know the truth. All we can do is follow our heart and follow the inner guidance that we've been given, and see where it goes. But I think if it's you follow your heart, you can't go wrong, because there's a lot of people right now that are following their heart, and they're really good people. And you know, my world right now is surrounded by people I trust, who I can right. be vulnerable with, who I can make mistakes with, who I don't feel shame or judgment
right.
So when I think something crazy, they may not believe the same thing I do, but they hold the space for me to believe what I want until I either prove that it's true, or I realize, I wasn't really right about that. Let me go into something else.
Yeah.
So the people you surround yourself with are really important right now.
Yeah, I agree. That whole sense of community is so important in this. And that's one of the reasons I started a UFO group, was because I wanted to find my tribe. That's what I'm doing.
Exactly.
And yeah. And this is what you're doing too. And why don't you tell us a little bit more about your wisdom portal, because that's going to be your community.
I actually
that you're
started,
building.
I
yeah.
actually had the idea for this probably 25 years ago. And it was way, again, like I said, it was way ahead of its time. And
yes.
And the idea, it's called wisdom keeping. You know, I'm an elder now, and
right.
I'm happy that I'm an elder, because I get to take all my experience and all my knowledge, and I get to help other people that are younger than me that are going through a similar experience. And I want to help them get through the system in a better way than I had to get through it. So, you know, what I'm doing with wisdom keeping is trying to bring wisdom into the equation, but this will be a portal. I will not have any social media attached to it. I want to create a space where people just find it. It's all about resonance. I'm all about resonance. So you will find it through some way, shape, or form, someone telling you. You can sign up. Right now I have a little page. You can sign up, and when it finally launches, you know, there'll be all this information will come out. But I want to be able to bring people into a place where they are safe, where they can communicate, where there are,
yes.
I will have a course called Wisdom Keeping, which is an 8-week course, which is all about the eight the eight kind of experiences you'll have during the awakening process so that you can normalize what's going on and it doesn't feel like you're the freak in the room. And then and there'll be other courses and there'll be books, not just my book, but there'll be other books and there'll be other people that are coming from their heart. They're here to be of service that can provide you with whatever services and experience that they've had in their life. And I'm going to have a blog and, you know, it's going to be a whole big thing. I was telling you before we came on, like, I feel like I'm just the mushroom to stick my head out into the world and that I'm bringing people in that see my mushroom and they're going to go into the mycelium of wisdom keeping. And the mycelium is going to be all the resources, all the people, all the caring. I mean, this website is about caring intention because we need to start caring about each other. A lot of the spiritual community has become very like, you have to be discerning. You've got to take care of yourself. I'm a believer in sacrifice. We're at a point in time that I need to give 20% of my time. If I have 20% money to give, if I have 20% time, 20% talent, 20% skill, anything I have that I can give without obviously losing myself. But, you know, if we all just gave that 20% to someone around us who needs it, the world would change very rapidly. So that's what wisdom keeping will be all about. And it's a process because I'm not very tech savvy. But I do have the URLs out there. I do have something being built. And that will be the future for me, at least, you know, kind of coming in and anyone that wants to be part of that and has something that they want to talk about or offer, there'll be a lot of other people that are there to help that. Even if you don't quite like what I have to say, there'll be people, there that you will like what they have to say.
Right. Oh, well, that's wonderful. I'm excited. I'm going to be keeping an eye on that and definitely
thank you.
Would like to, you know, sign in and learn everything that I can. So what else is it? What else is coming up next? What do you think is in the future now in terms of consciousness and human awareness? Where are we all headed right now?
Well, I think we're kind of going into the blender in the next year or two. And I think, you know, the negative side of that obviously is there's going to be suffering attached to it. And I actually, you know, my mother for 9 years, I went into a level of suffering that I didn't even know existed, that I didn't know whether I was going to come out of. And I thought about writing a book at the time, but then I didn't want to get back into it. So I ended up writing a blog and I have it on Medium and it's called Making Sense of Suffering.
Oh, and interesting.
Suffering is a powerful transformational tool. You know, all the great things that happen on our planet, great artists suffer, you know, all the religious, you know, things that came out of the receptor, all the geopolitical, I mean, out of suffering comes beauty and comes change.
Yes.
But we try so hard not to suffer that we kind of suppress this. So, I think that we're going to be going through some suffering and that's why it's really important to help other people and to sacrifice and to not be so judgmental because we're all humans and we share a lot more similarities than we do.
Right.
Then we do differences. And so I don't know. I think it's once we get to the suffering part, then we're going to start finding way more conscious and we're going to start building. And it's happening, as you will know, because I always talk about consciousness being like you're looking at a frozen lake. And if you're not connected into these energies, and they are energies, they are frequencies, when I talk about consciousness, you're just looking at a frozen lake going, I don't get it. I don't see anything.
Right.
But if you're beneath the ice, there's all these currents and movement and action and growth and beauty. And what's happening now is that ice is beginning to crack. So people from the outside are beginning to look in. They don't really know what they're seeing down there. And they're a little afraid because we're taught by our cultures to be afraid of what we don't know. We have to leap into that unknown. And I'm all about going into the unexpected, that we're all going to have to become something that we didn't expect to come, to become, to get to the world that we want to live in. Otherwise, we're going to have a very difficult time. So I would just say, stay in your heart, connect to other people, you know, open yourself up. Don't think that you're crazy. And have a good time with it too, because there's an enormous amount of joy attached.
There
to it.
Absolutely is.
And it's not constant.
No, it's not.
It's not constant. You'll have this joy and then you'll go down and go, why was I happy? This is awful. But then you go back up again, and it just becomes a commitment that you make to yourself and to the world to be of service on the planet while you're here. And I don't know how many of us have that kind of connection, and most people don't really go there, but
right.
They can be having a way better time in life by becoming more conscious and just, you know, understanding what the word means, which is really just awareness. Consciousness
right.
is just awareness. You're just learning to be aware about more than you thought you knew.
Right. So what else do you have coming up in your life? Are you going to be appearing anywhere, working on another book?
Or? I do podcasts, you know,
and
it's ironic that I do podcasts, because if you had told me a few years ago I'd be doing this, I would have told you were crazy. I actually stuttered as a child and I barely communicated.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, that kind of, I grew out of that eventually, but I was older when I grew out of it, and I was very, very shy. And plus I was speaking about things that nobody else believed in.
Right.
But, So when I started doing podcasts, I really did them just because I was terrified. And I think it's really important to do things that terrify you.
See, you sound like a complete natural to me. You're completely coming across as someone who is super experienced and and comfortable with the process. So
that's shocking to me. I had to do 25 podcasts. I literally felt like I was going to vomit for the first four or five I did, because... You know, I was, you know, I had a great imposter complex, and I still do. I still, you know, I will hang up from this and I'll think, what would I say? I probably sound like an idiot, but I get in transmission. I mean, and when you start trusting the transmissions that come through you, and we don't know who those transmissions are. I'm very connected to cosmic energies, as anyone who knows me, like, knows. So, but I also don't say, oh, that's like Ramtha, or that's, they never give me who they are. They always say, we don't have a name. That's what humans do. So I don't know, that transmission could be coming from my higher self. It could be coming from God's source. It could be coming from the earth. It could be coming from anywhere. So I stopped caring about where it came from. And I just care about what the transmission is and how it can affect other people. So it's made me more confident, because I've talked about it a lot and I'm more comfortable in my own skin. And I think that's a big part of when you start making this transition, is you are very uncomfortable in your own skin, and other people do not want you to be in that skin, and they will push you more and more out to stay with them. And that's why it's important to find the people that allow you growth, because all this is growth. This is growth.
Absolutely.
Of awareness, growth of consciousness. And it's been a long life journey for me, and I'm glad that I took it. But if I look back and said, and if the universe said, hey, this is what you're going to go through, and this is what you're going to do in the end, I would have went, you know, maybe not. So you just have to.
I know. It's so funny, isn't it? I would have never in a million years thought that I would be running a UFO group, doing a podcast, and talking and meeting all these incredible people like you. And I'm very grateful.
You're called. And it's important. I mean, people, you know, the work that you're doing, we all hold these little, these little kind of pods of information and frequency. And yours is about UFO. You know, I don't really hold UFO, although I have cosmic experiences, but it's not the UFO I hold. I am purely about consciousness.
Yes.
But we are all connected.
We are all connected.
So I am connected to you, and then you'll connect to someone else.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden you're connected. All of a sudden through you, I am connected to someone across the world doing something totally different than I'm doing.
That's exactly right. And
we're all here to be of service. And these are the things that are beginning to happen. We are beginning to find each other. And the people that are just waking up, we need you.
We do. We need you. So,
have trust.
Everybody, make sure you read Linda's book.
Yeah, that would be great. I'd be very grateful to hear what you have to say too. Because
Trusting the Currents.
Yes.
You can find it on Amazon, and it's an amazing read. I'm just so grateful that you came and spoke with us today about all this. This has been
I'm grateful. I'm always
just beautiful.
Someone wants to speak to me.
Oh, no. Well, likewise.
Keep
this was a wonderful. Wonderful.
Humility is a big part of conscious awakening, because I know when I first started waking up, I kind of had this, oh, I'm the teacher and I know more than anybody else does. And well, the universe pounded that out of me. And when I wrote the book, you know, when I first finished the draft, I felt, okay, I'm the teacher now. I know all these things. But what I found was I was the book student. And I went through all the experiences in the book, but it took me years before I figured out that I was the book was not written for anyone else. The book was written for me. And now I'm embodying what the book had to represent. But that took me a long time. Yeah. So it's fun.
Yeah.
It's been a fun and interesting life experience. And I think that's the most we can hope for in life, is that we have an adventurous journey here.
Absolutely. And Linda, I just really appreciate your point of view on everything. And you have just a lot of wisdom to share with everyone watching this and then listening on the audio version.
Thank you.
I'm just so grateful for your time and your talent here. So I just
thanks, Bernie. You've been, it's been fun. And like I said, I told you before, like you have such a beautiful way that you've communicated, and what you've built is really a beautiful thing. And
Thank you.
Everyone should take a look at her website. It's gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. ABQUFOs.com, everybody. We are the most active UFO group in the country, and we have so much fun. We do online and in-person events, and we have wonderful conversations with beautiful cosmic humans like Linda. So thank you.